Presented by T-Mobile, the official wireless partner of Odyssey Sports. With an awesome network and great savings, there's never been a better time to join T-Mobile. Visit your neighborhood store to make the switch today.
Good morning, Bruce. How are you?
Good morning, guys. An interesting day in baseball for sure yesterday with the commissioner talking, Baez talking, Darvish talking. Where would you like to begin?
Let's go back to Saturday, Bruce, because I think that we've been talking about Chris Bryant and the 35-minute press conference, which I think was exceptional, and he was very honest and refreshingly open. What was your biggest takeaway of what he said, because he covered a lot of ground?
Well, you know, being a news guy, debunking the idea that $200 million or anything near that was ever offered, and how that was overly reported by numerous people out there, to making a case for the Cubs to have no choice but to trade Bryant because he wouldn't take that contract. I think that was the most interesting news from there. He was very strong putting out the commentary that he's the only one that actually knows what's going on between communications between the Cubs and him and Boris, and that there was nothing ever like that. So if he was really irritated about something, that was it. That what he was considering fake news, and the trumping up the idea that he should be traded because he won't take any money.
How is this going to play out?
I don't think it will, Zach. I just think it's going to continue on. The local media will lighten up on this story a little bit, because you just can't bash a guy every day on the unknown. But as spring training continues on, you're going to have national guys coming in asking the questions over and over again. Are you going to sign? Can you sign? Do you want to be a Cub? What do you think about 2 years from now? Will you take a big amount of an extension? And Bryant was really strong, saying that, Scott Boras is the best agent in sports. He represents players better than anyone else. But at the end of the day, he works for Chris Bryant. And he was very strong about the fact that if he got the money offer that he wanted to stay with the Cubs, that he would certainly pay attention to that and probably take it.
Now, that's one aspect of it. The other is, from a Cubs standpoint, if teams are calling Theo Epstein to inquire if Chris Bryant is available, is there a possibility that he gets traded in the near term?
Well, I don't know what you mean by near term. Before spring training's over?
Before spring training is over, is there a chance that he ends up on another team?
I think there is. I think it's more likely that if he gets traded, it's going to be by the trading deadline. And that at that point, the Cubs' fate for 2020 will be more in line with what we know. Are they going to be a contending team? Will they be looking to add on rather than subtract a superstar at the trading deadline? With 1 year left on contracts for him, and for Schwarber and for Baez, will these guys be considered the future of the Cubs by trading them and getting young players back, because of the fact that you can't go into the last season of a contract with players of this magnitude without, either maxing out on what they're worth by getting players back, or, monetizing it by signing them to long-term deals. So there's an awful lot still up in the air, and it's going to continue on.
Joined by Bruce Levine, our Scores baseball expert out in Arizona, Mullenhaw, Zach Zaidman in for Mully today. Bruce, yesterday then on Sunday, Javi Baez met with the media, and he talked about last year how pregame, his routine, kind of contributed to him being lax for the first few innings, and it took him a while to get into the game, and he said that his teammates were similarly affected by this sort of loose structure before games. What did you make of what Javi had to say, and how did that all come about?
Well, it was strong. I mean, the reason it came about was because we had heard, from the time that Joe was let go last year, that they wanted a team out there on the field before games, working together, being more connected. That's the message we've heard from David Ross from day one when he's become the manager. And they feel that under Joe that the guys got their work in, but there was a connectivity problem as far as them working together and being ready to play together to begin a game. So you're going to see a different dynamic out there. And Baez was talking about the fact that, you know, by the fourth, it took him to the fourth inning to feel loose, and that by that time, other teams had taken advantage of him and his teammates by scoring some runs that might not have occurred if they were more prepared physically and looser to get into the game. So I thought it was very compelling, and I thought it was direct. And by him bringing his teammates into it, I thought it was fascinating as well that the Cubs were not always ready to play when the game began physically because they were preparing on their own. It wasn't like they were sitting around doing nothing. That is not the case. But they were preparing individually inside to play that game that day.
It's an interesting point that you make because you've been there at spring training throughout the Joe Maddon era, and you saw the way things transpired during this part of the year out there in Mesa. Have you noticed tangible differences this early into spring training in terms of how the Cubs operate with workouts and all the things that you need to do to get yourself ready for an actual season?
Yeah, for sure. Yesterday, we saw live batting practice. What's live batting practice? Well, normally pitchers and hitters are there, and they have a cage behind them, and, you know, they foul balls off, and they, you know, they slow the play of it. In this case, you know, the Cubs have decided to use umpires for batting practice. So you have an umpire, and you have a live batting session between the hitter and the pitcher, and the hitter only gets through the count if he gets a hit, if he pops it up, if he strikes out on the first three pitches, he's out of there, the next guy's in. And that's the live process that they've come up with to make the adrenaline just a little bit more important, to make get the attention of the pitcher that's trying to get his work in and the hitter that's out there on a more real basis of game play simulation. I think it's really interesting. They started that yesterday.
They can also practice their arguments, Bruce, with the umpires.
You can't argue with a machine. You're going to have a machine behind the home plate by 2022.
Didn't Alec Mills almost get his head taken off by Wilson Contreras on a line drive that he had to protect himself?
Yeah. I mean, again, that's a great point, David, as well. The first time there's an injury in this live BP, because the adrenaline is too high for February the 16th, that might give them pause as well. Because you're really ramping up the play way before they need to be ready to be in that situation. We still have 5 days to go, 6 days to go before the first games. We always see that the regulars are only playing the first two, possibly three innings for the first week. We see the pitchers only in there throwing for an inning or two to begin their work. I'm talking about the major league pitchers. So, you know, again, this is all predicated on, yeah, this will be perfect. Once somebody gets hurt in this process, that might be another story.
Speaking of starting pitchers, I loved what Yu Darvish had to say yesterday, questioning the punishment of the Astros and Rob Manfred, the commissioner, when Darvish questioned why it was different when Olympic medals are stripped from champions because of cheating, why they did not do the same to the Astros in their World Series title from 2017.
I agree. You know, I'm not for taking the World Championship trophy away from the fans, but I do think that the way the commissioner addressed it and called it just a piece of metal diminishes you know, what that goal is and what that trophy means. I think that was played wrongly by Rob Manfred. But, you know, Darvish making that point was strong. He also protected his teammates from, you know, the arguments with Correa and talking about, you know, that Correa and his teammates should really slow their roll when they come to defending, talking back to people, telling them to back off. They have a lot to prove this year. They got enough on their plate. They don't need to be fighting with players over a situation where the team cheated and won because they did cheat.
Bruce, you've been around the game a long time. Have you ever heard other players complain about a scandal involving their peers the way this thing has gone?
You know, I the closest thing I remember to it, and Zach, you're right, nothing close to this. But the closest thing I remember is Paul Konerko and Frank Thomas insisting on testing for drugs the first time that they tested back in 2002 and 3. And they said that they wanted it to be mandatory, whether or not baseball found it to be mandatory. Back then, 7.5 of the players would have to test positive for it to become mandatory. They did, but before that, Konerko and Thomas said, we're up for testing all the time, because their games, their clean games, were being impacted by steroid users. They knew it. Other players knew it. And it took that testing to find out that that was indeed the case.
And Bruce, the reason I bring that up is because we heard from Manfred yesterday that one of the reasons that the Astros were not punished, I'm talking about the actual players on the team were not punished, is he mentioned the collective bargaining agreement with the union. And he also said that if it wasn't for Mike Fiers, they wouldn't have known any of this. They would not have had any kind of evidence to begin with, because no one was talking on the Astros. But yet you hear all these players around the league who have not been shy, Darvish, Trevor Bauer, Bellinger, they've all gone out of their way to be very public with their criticism. So my question is that a fair response from Manfred to say that he was not in a position to punish any of the players, when clearly around the league, other players want those players punished?
Yeah, I think Manfred was in no man's land, because he needed to get people on the record admitting they did it, and he did. Okay, that was the number one important thing to do, is to get the group of guys that cheated to admit it and give them immunity. At the same time, people are not going to be happy, and I'm not, and you're not, and no one else is, the fact that the guys who got immunity were the guys that benefited from it, and there was no punishment. So you can't have it both ways in this situation, unfortunately. And the residual effect of that was these poor uses of language to show how remorseful they were from doing this. None of them are remorseful. They're all defensive. There's a big difference between being defensive and remorseful. These guys are defensive because they don't want to be ridiculed going forward, but they weren't punished. And therefore, it's hard for them to be remorseful, because there was no real punishment for what they did. They were just told, you know, okay, well, use your information, don't do it again, and, you know, be sure you apologize. Well, everything came out hollow, and especially the owner, you know, who should never talk again in public, because that was something awful out there the other day when they all talked. But having it both ways, Manfred doesn't have that opportunity here. The next collective bargaining agreement might be a little bit stronger in the area where he can actually punish players for the unknown of if actually they did something that they cheated on and it impacted a game.
Bruce, before we let you go, over in Glendale yesterday, Luis Robert reported to spring training. That was a big deal. How would you describe the stir that created?
Well, it's a hugely important part of what the White Sox want to do there, because you have a guy that needs to be impactful in center field defensively, needs to be impactful at bat wherever Ricky Renteria bats him, and on the bases. This is a 30-30 guy. In the minor leagues at three different levels last year. So the expectations are huge for this guy. Kenny Williams talked about the fact that he doesn't want the pressure getting the best of him. But when Robert came in and talked, he said that, you know, his focus is just playing baseball, following the lead of the leaders on that team, and just being the guy that he is. I think he looks like he's pretty centered when it comes to that. We'll see, because everybody in baseball is already picking him to be the rookie of the year and be an impactful player for the Chicago White Sox.
Great stuff, Bruce. Have a great day.
All right, guys. Take care.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.